You know, if the first diviner was a slave, we would not have CoStar.
We then end up having to have a conversation about, like, okay, but is it the placements or is it anti-blackness? And are the placements also themselves trying to communicate anti-blackness?
Explanation and language, description, these things are powerful, even if they don't necessarily provide us answers or relief. Hey there, you're listening to Abolitionish, a Black politics and culture podcast at the end of the world, hosted by John John and produced by Wiley. This is season 2, episode 3, Space is the Place, part 1, Astrology, UFOs, and Faded Blackness. You can listen to every episode we've ever recorded by visiting anchor.fm or Spotify. And you can become a monthly supporter of the podcast with a donation of $5, $10, $50, $100, or $1 million by visiting patreon.com/abolitionish. That's patreon.com/abolitionish. You can follow us on Twitter at abolitionish and on Instagram at abolitionishpod. You can always send us an email, a recommendation for guests, topics, and the like at abolitionishpod@gmail.com. Welcome to Abolitionish, a podcast at the end of the world. My name is John John, and I'm coming to you right now from Mexico City, Mexico, where I've been for almost 2 months, and this is a very special episode for so many reasons. I'm really excited to get back into the swing of things with y'all, and welcome our new producer, Wiley. So I'm going to just hand it over to Wiley so they can talk a bit about themselves, where they're from, what they do, and what's brought them to Abolitionish, and yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Hey, everyone. Super, super excited to be here. So thank you all for tuning in. Yes, I am Wiley, also known as Who's Wiley or Featuring Wiley. I am an any pronouns ass nigga, just in case you are looking to engage me online. But yeah, what has brought me to Abolitionish? I mean, I was super excited to stumble across the podcast because it kind of felt like a, you know, recorded expression of the kinds of conversations I was having with my friends anyways. And I loved that, you know, we could engage, further deepen the knowledge that we had of certain aspects of Black culture or, you know, these topics in Black studies in a casual setting, in one that felt accessible, in one that felt, I don't know, truly like a communal learning space. That's really what I'm interested in, as opposed to, like, you know, feeling like I'm being lectured at about my own experience all the time. So that's one of the things that really, really excites me about this podcast and why I'm so excited to get involved and really bring my little spin on producing this show. And so on that note, just to share more about who I am and what else I'm up to, I am an artist and an astrologer in training. I have been kind of self-teaching myself astrology. I'll put in, like, air quotes, creative consultant. I do that too on occasion. Yeah, I feel like that's primarily the world that I exist in, and I'm super excited to talk about the other world amongst and around us celestially and our connection to them. So yeah, I'm super excited for this episode. Thank you so much for having me on, John John.
Absolutely. I'm excited. And I like the way that you said that, the other world around us celestially. It reminded me of whatchamacallit. There's this on TikTok and like YouTube and shit, like there are all these like videos of, like, the one I'm thinking about most recently is like a video that someone shared on TikTok, And I think the actual video is from YouTube, but basically it's one of those like Google Maps pan outs, not even Google Maps, but just like, it's like one of those animations, yeah. You know, where they like start at a building on Earth and then they go to like,
yeah,
all the layers of the atmosphere and our universe and other universes. And it's just, like when I'm really super, super anxious or like feeling mm-hmm. like I'm just losing my shit, those are so fucking like therapeutic. Just because it's like, yeah, yes, because it makes me feel that kind of like insignificance that helps me just like be like, okay, nigga, this, like, okay,
nothing
like,
matters.
You know, like, yeah, like, okay, you lost your keys. Who gives a fuck? Like, there are, you know, there are aliens out there. Like, who the fuck cares?
I'm dead.
But also because it's just like, I don't know, like, now, like, I've been seeing them recently. And just thinking about how, like, something like that can coexist on my timeline with, like, I don't know, the newest wave of COVID deaths, or, like, Nicki Minaj talking about her cousin's balls, or, like...
Right. Oh, my God.
It just feels fucking nuts. But I've saved it. Like, I've saved that tweet, and I've just been going back to it recently. So that's what that reminded me of. But, yeah, like... Being able to pan out when I feel like that kind of, and maybe that's also why I like astrology, one of the reasons you could say astrology is derided or shat on. Same with maybe like forms of spirituality and shit, is just because like that kind of panning out doesn't seem like something that's like really rewarded. You know, like it's seen as a distraction, or it's seen as like fiction, or it's seen as I'm just thinking about academics, right? Like it's seen as like a form of charlatanism or whatever. Like, but yeah, I just feel like that the kind of like panning out or like big picture looking that astrology can like help with isn't something that's like incentivized or rewarded in our present moment. And maybe, you know, present moment could mean this year, present moment could mean like the past century or whatever. But yeah, to get us started, so in preparing for this conversation, Wiley and I had talked a lot about just like our relationships to astrology. Wiley being like an astrologer in training, me being like a gay who knows some of his placements, but not really. So very disparate relationships, very, but also like, I think very similar predispositions, which is why I'm excited for this conversation, because I feel like Wiley has so much more knowledge about this, but we share a kind of approach. So I'm excited about. So yeah, I would love for you to walk us through, to guide us through basically like how you found astrology, how astrology found you, maybe what were some of the initial questions or things that you wanted to figure out? Yeah, especially for folks who are listening who aren't into astrology, don't know their placements, don't know the history of astrology, don't know how to feel about it. Yeah, like a mini orientation of sorts, but through your own experience, because I think
awesome.
Yeah, that would be lovely.
Yeah, I would love to. Thank you for asking. I feel like, yeah, it's definitely a case of astrology finding me as opposed to me finding astrology. I cannot remember when I discovered that there was a thing called a Pisces and that I was one of them. But it was definitely like elementary school type of age. Didn't really mean much besides, you know, I guess kids running around and being like, you're a fish, you know, whatever. But it's more kind of like in college that I really started to get into these conversations more. Just myself being a queer person, being surrounded by other queer people, as you said, and which I love that you said, that your positionality or expertise in this conversation is really coming from the experience of being a gay. So it really was that. Like, I was just like in queer spaces and folks were talking about their sun sign and their moon sign, and I'm discovering I have a Venus and a Mercury and all these things, you know, supposedly reflect something about me. And of course my Leo rising ass was like, tell me more. I would love to know more about myself. So it really started from that standpoint, having friends that were loosely interested and them telling me to download CoStar, or, you know, everyone sharing a collective sense of panic around Mercury retrograde, even though we had no idea what that meant, but we knew it was supposed to be a bad thing. So that's kind of where it began. And then after I graduated, for my 23rd birthday, which was a year ago, a year and some change at this point, I got my first astrology reading. And by then, I had already kind of been getting more and more, I guess, involved in astro conversations, just on Twitter, following all these astrologers that I respected, and reading the tweets and being like, I understand some of these words, I know some of these words, you know, and kind of letting the other half fly over my head. So when I got this astro reading, that's when I really was like, whoa, like, you can draw out all of this. Like, astrology can do this, it can do this much. You know, at that point, up until that point, obviously I knew there was something deeper behind the craft. But it really existed more as like, almost like a personality quiz, a celestially oriented personality quiz. And now it was like, you know, this astrologer is impacting my relationship with my mother and even the concept of the maternal with me. And I didn't know astrology would go there. So that deeply fascinated me. And all throughout that next year, I just was very slowly but surely learning things, not really too, what can I say, kind of like intently or with much direction or intention. You know, I'm a Gemini moon, so I'll be all over the place and very comfortable in being all over the place. But yeah, it's actually last year, around about this time, maybe a little later, like November-ish, when my cousin came over, we were chatting astrology. I'd gone down some rabbit hole for some reason and learned a few extra tricks, I guess. And we were just chatting, and I ended up giving her a reading almost by accident, where like we were talking about what's been going on in her life, you know, how she feels about this and that. And as she kept saying things, with my very little knowledge, it's actually so funny to look back and be like, well, I really thought I knew things back then. But, you know, she'd say things and I'd be like, oh, that kind of sounds like Libra moon energy. You know, like, oh, I wonder what's going on with your fourth house, because that, you know, says a lot about the home, and you're saying your home life was like that. So like, maybe you have these planets in there. And we did all that. And then we were like, oh, let's check out the chart to see what this looks like. And just about everything that I had accidentally delineated was showing up in the chart. And I took that as a sign and was like, oh, wow, like, I think it's really time for me to take this more seriously. Perhaps there is a gifting that I was not aware that I had that I should honor. So, yeah, that's kind of how I started studying more intently. I tend to be a very auditory learner, so it's been a lot of, like, you know, either listening to podcasts or talks and lectures, just hearing people speak about their engagement with the craft and with the planets, and basing my knowledge off of that mainly. And even with conversations with other friends who, you know, I'm very grateful to have a couple people in my life who are also on a similar journey. So us getting together and really sitting down to think about what a nocturnal Mars looks like and means, you know, And getting into those intricacies has been a lot of fun. And in terms of what I was looking to learn or get out of astrology, I think it's actually less so that I was looking for answers and more so that I was looking for language, you know, ways to put words to some of the things that I'd experienced. Because I never expected astrology to tell me about myself. I tend to be somebody, I'm very in my own head. So I've had very few experiences in my life where I've been like, you know, a new side of myself has been like revealed to me. I was always like, you know, I knew that was there. Was I going to acknowledge it? Maybe not. But we saw her. We knew she was there. But with astrology, what was interesting is being able to, to name things and finding a power in that. So I think that's more so what astrology has provided for me. And as I have moved more towards, you know, producing astrology content and giving readings, I find that that's chiefly what I'm looking to do, to help people describe their experience. And it's been incredible to see just how good a job astrology does of doing that. So, yeah.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for that. I'm really interested in what you said about, you know, I was less looking for answers and more looking for language. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like, you know, and we had spoken earlier about how the roots of this podcast are like a bunch of grad students in Black studies in the U.S. being like, mm-hmm. we don't have language for what we feel right now. We don't feel like we mm-hmm. have language for what we're going through, the kind of questions that we're asking, the kind of relationships that we're forced to have or that we start building, just like the precarity and perversity mm-hmm. of being in an industry, which is what the university is, that
right.
feigns, that tells everyone that they do have answers, right? And so, like, I feel like if a 16-year-old asked me, like, why'd you go to grad school? Maybe the first thing I would tell them is, like, I went to undergrad for answers, like, answers to, like, how do I stop being poor? How do I, like, you know, defend my family? How do I, whatever, whatever. And I feel like I went to grad school for language, like, for, not for answers, but for help describing what I was seeing and what I was feeling. And certainly not to compare the university with astrology, but to talk about, but maybe to compare, well, to do what you just did, right, is to say that, like, astrology doesn't have to be this, that, you know, that, like, things like explanation and revelation are powerful on their own, even if they don't provide right. a certain kind of relief, you know, or a certain kind of, like, resolve, right. you know? And I think that, yeah, I'm. That's just really fascinating to me. Like when you said it, a light went off, and I was like, "Oh, that's so dope." That because something I've tried to, like, the way I think about astrology is like, I do think it of like a, as like a as kind of like a diagnostic sounds a bit medical, but yeah, as like a diagnostic or like explanatory mm-hmm. tool, you know. Less than like a, I'm trying to think of what the big book of mental illness is, like the MS.
Oh, the DSM.
There you go. Yeah, the DSM-5. I was about to say the, do you want
MSNBC?
Yeah. tomato, tomato, okay. Shit. But yeah, like, you know, rather than like the DSM-5, like it's not this book of diagnoses and treatment right. and answers. It's mm-hmm. more like a well that you can pull from, or, you know, like a word bank even. That's really dope. I really like that. So you mentioned that you're kind of hitting the stride of like being in community with folks who are also on a journey of like figuring out their relationship to this thing, especially as, like, a practitioner.
Right.
I would love to hear a bit about, I'm trying to, that's what this reminds me of. The second recent episode when we talked to Daylan, who was making a transition from being like a cognitive behavioral therapist to being like more like a life coach and a supporter, for Black folks who are kind of like trying to get something out of mental health that mental health necessarily can't provide, that kind of language, you know, I had asked Daylan, what do people come to you for? Like, that was part of what we talked about is how, you know, even folks who want to be well come to psychiatry, for example, for answers, right? Like, we're not trying to, I mean, maybe, but a lot of folks, and it's not even, this isn't really a moral judgment. It's more so like niggas got shit to do. Like, you got kids, you got a job. Maybe you ain't got time to talk about what happened when you were 7, but you do have time to take some medication to like help you function, you know? And how like that, like what people want out of the thing can like start to wear on how your relationship to it. And so I would love to hear from you about, and you know, like you talked about how you're relatively new in terms of doing readings for folks and whatnot, but I would love to hear you talk about like, in your experience thus far, like what are folks coming to astrology for, specifically Black folks coming to astrology for, and do you feel like, and like how do you navigate or negotiate maybe the space between what folks are coming to get and like what you feel you can offer?
Right. Yeah, that's huge. And I want to acknowledge first before I get to that question, super, super interesting, in fact, to think about comparing astrology to the academy, because astrology does also have its own relationship to institutions, and at different times throughout history has had like its own like institutional backing, and even now, you know, like there are certain astrologers who choose to go the route of like being certified by very particular bodies or attending Kepler, which is, you know, itself a university. So there is like, honestly, from the beginning, there has been a strong relationship between astrology and the institutions of the day. So maybe that will come up a little bit later, but I did want to say that's a super interesting comparison that if we don't get into right now, we should just separately chat about, because I hadn't really thought too much about that, but now I'm curious. But anyway.
Well, no, but before we, before you share, we don't have to go all into it, but if you could share maybe like one example of that kind of institutional relationship that you think most folks might not be aware of, that'd be really dope.
Awesome. Sure. So I am probably going to be slapped on the wrist by any astrologist who listens to this, because there are definitely gaps in my astrology history knowledge. But from my understanding of things, astrology began more as like a mundane astrology practice, which is where, you know, certain diviners were using the planets as omens, you know, in order to kind of communicate the impending fate of a nation, you know, and it was really more so like the king or whatever ruler of the time working with these diviners to understand his own fate, with the king being like a representative of the state and the nation, right? And by extension of his own fate, the fate of, the state. So it became like, or rather it has its beginnings more so as like a state practice. And it's only later on that natal astrology was developed, and now folks are using birth charts, and, you know, individual people are going to astrologers to get a sense of their own fate, you know. But it was really a means for predicting the success and failure of nations. Like, that's where astrology begins. So that is super interesting for me to consider, And then, you know, we journey. We move from like a Hellenistic astrology practice into more of a modern astrology practice, where it becomes all about more so psychological astrology and like what's known as evolutionary astrology, which is all about freeing oneself, right? And liberation, et cetera, et cetera. And where I think the current incredibly humanist leanings of astrology really find their root in the origins of like psychological and evolutionary astrology. But, you know, those state-sanctioned origins are sometimes forgotten or lost. And then I also think about the fact that, again, there are particular bodies that certify astrologers. There's Kepler College, which itself is like an astrological institution. So it's also very interesting to see how, even though astrology itself has like, I guess with time, become more of like a, what can I say? Like, not necessarily a free form practice, but it's kind of like after the world was being Christianized, the project of Christendom, you know, astrology took a turn from being state sanctioned to being outlawed. And that's more so when things became a lot more, I guess, independent, if I can use that word. So it's very interesting that, like, even though for centuries, there's been kind of like a schism between institutions and astrology, astrologers have then gone on to create their own institutions, you know, to bring that into the modern moment. So I think that's super, super interesting. And there's a lot of like delineating structure, institutionality, and all of that in astrology as well, chiefly with like engaging Saturn as the planet that rules these things. So yeah, I just think that's super interesting.
No, it is. It's really interesting to think about. Yeah, okay, so the abridged history is, mm-hmm. you know, that, like, this is something that is wielded by the powerful to maintain control of, like, right. empires and kingdoms. And mm-hmm. then it is, you know, the Crusades and the Christianization of the planet.
Right.
And, you know, divination is not, you know, it becomes taboo. And then, like, as you ended with, like, in our current moment, and so, you know, it's interesting to think about, like, you talked about Kepler and these institutions that, like, authorize a certain, like, way of doing astrology and, like, mm-hmm. like, you know, are pushing certain definition. I mean, you know, it's like any institution, right? Like, how does an institution maintain its power? It creates a set of definitive right. terms. It, you know, it, right. it propagates those definitive terms. It makes it so that you can't do the thing without towing their line. And, you know, that's not even just states. That's also like professional institutions, sororities, whatever, like human, social, whatever the fuck. Mm-hmm. What do you think are, because I mean, you know, someone might be listening and that someone might be me, honestly. Like the first thought I had is like, like, is it, so yeah, like, you know, people start associations and colleges and all this shit to reproduce a certain kind of logic or a certain narrative of the world or whatever. And so, sure, like, mm-hmm. if someone was like, you know, these niggas at Kepler are just trying to make money, I'd be like, okay, sure. But I do think, like, you know, that, like, put it like this, universities don't just exist for profits. I mean, yes, now they, especially in the U.S., they are making bank because of what they're expected to deliver for people and what people are desiring in terms of education, career, whatever. But they also serve all these, like, I wouldn't say latent functions, but, you know, like, the government, like everyone who works in nuclear weapons comes from like 5 schools in the US, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. Similarly, like, I don't know, like thinking of certain like cultural institutions, these places also produce people who have a certain relationship to this form of music or a certain relationship to this form of acting, right? Like, it's not, I mean, yes, right. Prophet is king. And like, for folks who exist in these institutions who are not making bank, the things that keep them there, like, you know, think about a grad student, right? Like, grad students at UC Berkeley making, you know, take home pay of 10 grand a year. They're not there because they believe, you know, they're not there because profit is their God. Chances are they're there because they want to create knowledge, or they want to build community, right. or not even to make it all happy, but, you know, maybe they, you know, they want to reproduce certain kinds of violences that can only be reproduced in the university, mm-hmm. right? Like, I'm thinking of, mm-hmm. you know, some grad students are terrible people and terrible teachers. And that's okay to say, right? Like, this idea that, oh, like, no one would be here if they didn't have to be. No, some of you niggas are here because you like torturing students. Like, some of you are here because you like dick swinging intellectually, you know, like, so it's not just to be like, oh, like, whatever. But I say all that to say, when you think of astrological organizations and like that kind of that reproduction of, or yeah, like that current, that modern structure, what are some of the, mm-hmm. what are some of the things that you think, outside of just like, I don't know, collecting dues from people and like hosting conferences that you have to pay to attend, what do you think are some of the other rules and like, why else might those institutions exist? What do you think those astrologers get out of being the authority, if that makes sense?
Got you. Well, I think chiefly it's about, you know, astrology really is based upon very organized study, right? Like, there are very preset logics to a lot of things, and of course some really incredible astrologers that I respect, and also some other ones that I might not be very inclined to listen to, have built upon those knowledge bases. But there is, like, you know, Saturn means this and it does not mean that. And not under any circumstances does it mean that, you know. There are very particular techniques and logics, etc., that have to be studied and learned. And so I guess the institutions, these astrological institutions, they provide access. You know, like, I have been playing a lot with both modern astrology and Hellenistic astrology techniques. But at some stage, you know, the free content online runs out. And if I want to learn more about something like zodiacal releasing, I'm going to need to, you know, afford a lecture on the topic, which I understand, right? Because it's like, even me moving from giving my friends readings for free to charging for readings is because it's a very time-intensive, labor-intensive craft. And so if I was going to be able to further my studies, I had to make sure that my family can eat at the same time, you know? And not that this is, like, taking me away from doing compensated work. So I definitely understand, and perhaps I'm more inclined to support independent content creators, you know, who are making these lectures and whatever else, as opposed to like an institution. I just have beef with institutions, and astrologers would say the reason why is because I have Saturn in its fall, and we can talk all about that later. But yeah, I think chiefly what these institutions are providing is access and also a form of, like, what's the word, accreditation. I can't remember how many T's that word has, I forever forget. But, you know, being able to label these astrologers as the ones who definitely, for sure, we are doubly certain, have the knowledge of like a foundationally competent astrologer. Because it's a lot less, well, it's like, it is intuitively involved, right? You do need like an intuitive knowledge to understand that like two people might have very similar placements and it can mean very different things, right? And knowing which delineations to reach for and how to make sense of these pieces when they're put together. But still, you would need to know or have an intimate knowledge of each piece, right? So I think that's what the institutions are looking to, I don't know what word to use, safeguard, gatekeep, the process of determining who has that knowledge. Although I will say that with the rise of like, you know, some like almost celebrity astrologers, and there being, you know, a world of threads on Twitter and, you know, podcasts on YouTube, et cetera, et cetera. This idea of like expertise, who holds expertise, is now shifting and changing, right? And now that like takes us into a conversation about celebrity and platforming and all that kind of stuff. And so somebody with, you know, 300,000 followers might be deemed an expert just based on the size of their platform. Although I do think that those who really respect the craft, they're very quick. There's always beef. There's always drama in astrology Twitter. So if somebody is like using their huge platform to delineate some nonsense, it will usually very quickly be called out. But it is kind of like, you know, these popular astrologers do have a certain weight to their words that others might not, or they might need kind of like the, what's the word I'm looking for, to be vouched for, or the cosign, right, of these popular astrologers to be deemed credible. So yeah, I think all that is involved.
That's interesting, right? Because I feel like that the way that virality in the internet has kind of like made becoming an authority or like becoming blue checked the thing, you know? I mean, even in a place that, yeah, like is traditionally, that traditionally is, has been very hesitant to yield to things like celebrity. I mean, I'm just thinking about the university again, right? Like academics are always complaining that, you know, oh, I didn't get this job because I don't have a strong Twitter following, or, oh, I didn't get this job because, you know, my name is not as known in whatever fucking field. So that's real. That's really real. Okay. So right now we're experiencing this, I wouldn't call it, and maybe you probably wouldn't also call it, like, a democratization of astrology, especially because it's like, it's like, you know, it's like, what does it mean to democratize something that is necessarily a specialization, you know? Like,
right.
And people are like, democratize the academy. I'm like, babe, that's, don't come here. Don't come here looking for that, right? Like, these people aren't interested in that because the only way they're going to be able to feed their family in 6 years is if they specialize the hell out of themselves, from like the things they read to the terms they use, to the people they know. So certainly maybe not democratized, but it's maybe becoming more accessible, or some of it is becoming more accessible, or certainly I think like in the era of, like you said, of CoStar and all these like digital tools, for folks to tap into natal astrology if they had never done so before. There's a, what do you call it? Well, I guess, I'm still really interested in this question of like, I'll bring us back. That was my fault. So I'll bring us back to the question of, So you are fresh on the astrology scene. You are learning with folks, and you're starting to take folks for readings. What are some of the things that you feel folks are coming to you for? And you can be as specific or broad as you want. And then, you know, like, how are you navigating either your ability to deliver that for them, your inability to, you just like being completely disaligned with whatever it is they want out of astrology? I would love to hear some more about that.
Awesome. Yeah, I feel like, so it has been primarily Black folks coming to me. I've had very few non-Black readings. I must say I'm also quite grateful for that. but yeah, primarily folks are coming to get a better understanding of themselves, or some fuck shit is happening in life and they're like, why does this guy hate me? What are the planets up to? I guess like I definitely have encountered some folks who are in a similar space to where I was, where they're just like, I just want to see what it says, you know? I want new language, perhaps. And so I find I'm doing like a lot of shadow work readings. I'm doing a lot of birth chart breakdown readings. And, you know, they always say that you give the reading that your client is supposed to get on that day. So even though we might start out talking about, oh yeah, I've done like a lot of like lessons in love readings as well. And so we might start out talking about the love life, but as we journey through the chart, we wind up unpacking like, I don't know, random elementary school experiences or somebody's relationship to notions of beauty or like, I don't know why they tend to plan every aspect of their life, and that's why they came to me for a love reading, because they want to be able to plan for their next romantic encounter. And I'm always amazed at just how much astrology can do and can show you. I'm trying to think, there was something else I wanted to say on that point. I can't really remember, but if there are any aspects of what you were curious about with that question that I haven't really tapped into, let me know, and I'd love to chat more about it.
Word, yeah. Let me think.
Oh, I was going to say, there definitely has been a trend, though, primarily in reading for Black non-men, where I'll see a placement in a chart like, okay, this person has Mercury, the planet of the messenger, you know, the planet of communication, logic, reasoning. They have it square Pluto, right? So having this intense conversation with Pluto, the planet of intensity, and an easy, you know, kind of like low-hanging fruit delineation of that is like, oh, when you speak, perhaps like your words tend to carry more weight than others, right? And maybe this Mercury is in a Saturn ruled sign. So that also connotes authority, and maybe you're held more responsible for your words. And even if you're speaking very lightheartedly, there's all this weight to it. And sometimes like when I'm delineating that, we then end up having to have a conversation about like, okay, but is it the placements or is it anti-Blackness? And are the placements also themselves trying to communicate anti-Blackness, you know? So that's definitely been a running theme, especially in delineating for Black non-men, where we have to be like, okay, they're saying, you know, they, the planets, are saying you have Venus retrograde, right? And so in this aspect or area of your life, there tends to be a lot of, for example, disharmony, right? Or perhaps you are very slept on in love and there've been all these delays in love and you're kind of seen as like the underdog when it comes to your love life. But to what extent, which I would say is all of it, is this the work of anti-Blackness and desirability politics? And like, you know, so it then ends up being a question about, like, yeah, are the stars or the planets trying to point me towards an analysis of anti-blackness and desirability politics, etc.? Or is this astrology's naming of what I know to be these other things, you know? So yeah, that's been interesting as well.
Yeah. Now that's really interesting, because so the question that it presents me with is, mm-hmm. you know, like, or the question that seems to be coming out in those conversations is like, how can I say it? Like, so if folks come to astrology, not necessarily for answers, maybe, but for answers or for language or for some kind of explanation of what's going on and why, who they are, how they behave, how they feel, and why. And then later in this conversation, or not even later, immediately, you have to reckon with the fact that you're talking to a black person, and you don't, because you're black, right? But like, this, you're black folks in a world where even, so, you know, earlier I was like, oh, like, explanation and language, description, these things are powerful, even if they don't necessarily mm-hmm. provide us answers or relief. And at the same time, right, I feel like when you're black, the way that that feels, the way that, like, even explanation can kind of, like, the way that even explanation is kind of, like, something that you, not necessarily something that you refused, right? Because, like, that's my beef with, like, the whole democratize the academy, democratize black study shit, is because it's, like, yes, like, first of all, some people need to be, first of all, democratization is not the most dangerous thing, okay? It's truly the most inept, defanged shit, right? It's like, let's democratize empire. Cool, amazing, wonderful, very exciting. But like the other thing that I have with that kind of performative ask is that if you, like, some folks come to study, mm-hmm. not because they want to torture students, not because they want to feed their ego, probably some of those things always, but like, primarily, let's say, someone comes because they want language, they want new descriptive mm-hmm. tools, and right. what they find, and I'll just use myself as an example, what I found, right, was that not only were the descriptions of my reality contested among people broadly, not even, you know, and then also people in the field, but even in my own mind, like, I was contesting things with myself, like, that, you know, that kind of Fanonian, like, or Du Bois, you know, like, that argument that to be black in the world is to not be in control of your relationship to yourself in the way that other folks can. Like, folks can, you know, non-black folks can take comfort in the fact that they are not actually harboring a, you know, thousand-year desire to harm themselves and hate themselves, you know? Like, like, just to say you're, you know, you're a white person. Shit, let me not even... You're Indian. You're Indian, right? You're Indian, and because, you know, it's time to wake them up. You're Indian.
Yes.
And, you know, you come to astrology, and maybe you, it's not even, you know, Hellenistic or modern astrology, right? Like it's, you know, what's, I'm trying to think of the term for,
Vedic astrology.
There you go, right. So just to say, like, you know, going toe-to-toe with your Vedic astrologer, one thing that you certainly, historically, absolutely do not have to worry about is the fact that at the end of this reading, what you're going to have to reckon with is something that you can't think. I think for black folks, though, for me, I feel this way when I'm in therapy. I feel this way when I'm talking to folks like about my chart, is that at the end of this explanatory experiment, either I'm going to be left to do something that I can't possibly do, like make the world not anti-Black, or I'm going to be left with what it feels like to not be able to do that thing, you know? And so, you know, for these, for the folks that you're talking about, like your clients who aren't Black men who are, who you're reading, and you immediately are having this conversation of like, trying to think about it, like, I don't know. I think that maybe you could do a better job, even if you just sort of freestyle it. Like, okay, so what I'm trying to probe you about is like, do you think that when that happens, is it, do you feel like astrology is limited, or does it feel like you're running up against a wall that astrology has built, or does it feel like what you're experiencing is like the intervention, but what's that fucking word? I'm going to need to say it, otherwise it'll keep bothering me. Oh, like, yeah, like, do you feel like anti-Blackness is imposing itself? It's breaking in, you know what I mean? Like, it's, yeah, or maybe it feels like both. I don't know. But I think, like, if you could talk to that a bit more, I would have another question for you.
Awesome. Okay. I feel like my starting point in thinking about this is like, you know, in considering anti-Blackness like foundational to the world we exist in, by virtue of that, like, I cannot think about it as anti-Blackness breaking in, right? Perhaps more so that like these particular placements that delineate something like, being held more responsible than others, for example, as being like almost like breaks in the veil, perhaps, of the ways anti-Blackness disguises itself as other things. And so these are the revealing moments where I'm like, oh yeah, as we're talking about your life, like, we have to talk about anti-Blackness. And we're being really reminded that it is everywhere, and you know just how pervasive it is. So, I guess with that, I also think about how, and I feel like this is kind of on the wave of what you were saying when you're like, "Oh, even in like as Black people, even in trying to find language for our experience," and then you know you were bringing up like this conflict that comes in that journey. I was even thinking about like how, just how dangerous particular namings can be, right? Because like, I'm thinking about if in all those readings, if I had forgotten to acknowledge anti-Blackness in the conversation, what would the result have been? Like, all these like Black non-men walking away like, oh, so that's why I'm held more responsible? You know, like, it's because of displacement, you know? Like, guess that's just my lot in life. And now, like, I, as the astrologer, have accidentally made myself, like, a tool for the, I guess, like, obscuring of anti-Blackness. You know what I mean? And now, as I see you thinking about that, it almost makes me shudder to think about all the other readings in which this might be happening.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, if that's not the most explicit recommendation for Black people to never go to non-Black astrologers, I don't know what it is.
Right, and even, like, as astrologers, as Black astrologers, to not get lofty with our understanding of life and its rhythms and cycles, but we forget the anchorage of this world, right? Like, we are not delineating on fucking Mars in, like, whatever paradigm exists there. We have to acknowledge the one that we're in. So, yeah. That's huge. That's big.
I'm just thinking about, you know, when I asked Dalen a similar question about psychotherapy, and he's like, you know, like, if Black folks are coming to me for something that I cannot provide them, it's definitely taken a toll on my relationship to the practice, but it's also made me want to figure out how to switch it up so that I'm actually providing people what I want, not necessarily what I want to versus what they need, but like developing a practice where what someone wants, what someone needs, and what you want and need to give them as a practitioner, like can actually be like mediated without like the expectation of like curing someone or providing relief, you know, because that's kind of what I'm, because I'm just thinking like, what would it mean for you, right, to give a Black person a reading who doesn't want to talk about anti-Blackness as a paradigm, who actually wants you to pretend as though they are on Mars and so are you, like,
right?
And maybe it's a, I mean, I'm hoping that you haven't experienced this or experienced it often, but I think that like your it just sounds like being very defensive of what of like what. Being very defensive of your starting point, not necessarily, being defensive of your starting point as a practitioner, right? Because just because your client doesn't think anti-Blackness is real, doesn't mean that you have to, like, perform or pretend a certain kind of, like, you know, like, ignorance to the shit. So if you've had any of those experiences and they've made you think about certain things, I think I'd love to hear that. But otherwise, I'll ask something else.
Yeah. So I have not had any of those experiences, gratefully so. But I'm thinking about what it would mean for a client to ask that of me, right? Because then it would mean like, this person is experiencing the same violences, but is ready and willing to acknowledge the planets and their placement as the origin of that violence, but not willing to acknowledge anti-Blackness, you know? And so that just kind of has me like rabbit holing down, like, why it would be so much easier for them to just like, on an individual basis, be like, oh, this is my like personal lot in life. This is only my fate and only my burden, right? As opposed to like this paradigmatic violence that they are set to suffer because they are Black. And so other Black folks would also suffer that same fate, although the fate might be expressed differently and revealed through different placements, you know? So that is kind of what I'm thinking about in considering that question. And that also has me thinking about how, like, because even as we were preparing for this episode, I kept bringing up this idea of, like, delineating one's way into an understanding of anti-Blackness or out of it, right? And I'm still trying to figure out, like, what is the relationship that the planets have to this paradigm, right? Do they act on behalf of anti-Blackness? Do they, I don't know. I'm still figuring that out. And so in the instance of this client that is so ready and willing to be like, oh, Mercury and Pluto are teaming up because they hate me. And so that's why my words carry this weight and like bring in all this like chaos into my life. Why it is that like the planets exist as more, what's the word? I don't know if innocuous is the word, or like, you know, just like more palatable actors than like anti-Blackness, like why that would be so, too much to bear, even though they're experiencing the same violence regardless,
Right. Even if someone doesn't necessarily think the planets are benevolent or well-meaning, it does seem, I'd bet my money that for anyone in this world, it'd be easier to, that's a really interesting question, right? Like, is it, and because especially for Black folks, I'm just thinking about diasporically, like folks' relationship to faith and religion, organized or not. And the ability of astrology, not necessarily to displace religion, but to offer instruction, like folks' willingness to seed that authority, but not seed that similar authority to, like, I don't know, whatever theory of anti-blackness you want to throw into the mix. It's really interesting, and it makes me think, like, you know, maybe a good angle for this is to think just about, like, how Black thought more generally is derided, discarded, you know, like, if astrology's if the roots of astrology were African, or if the roots of astrology, like, if, you know, if the first diviner was a slave, we would not have CoStar, right?
Like, I'm good.
You know, like, if, I mean, and, you know, and I feel comfortable saying that only because the kinds of cultural, well, I put like, well, that's interesting, right? Like, if the diviner's role in the slave ship wasn't just to keep people alive or instill some kind of cultural memory or, you know, just to say we're on the plantation or whatever, and the diviner's job isn't just to provide relief or pleasure, yeah, I feel like that person would be fucked up, mostly or wouldn't be taken seriously only because, well, I guess because I'm thinking about, like, yeah, like, there are definitely, like, cultural products that are rendered from Blackness that are extremely profitable and, you know, like, whether it's rap, jazz, all of dance, like,
right.
But, and it's not to say that, like, it's not to sort of, like, put a diviner above, say, like, a musician or something. But I guess I'm interested in, like, how, you know, certain kinds of Black thought or creation become popularized and profitable, and some don't, right?
Right.
And so I guess this is making me think about, like, are there Black astrologers that you feel maybe don't benefit from the kind of, how do you put it? So if it's easier for the average Black person to, for all sorts of reasons, to want and believe what the planets tell them more than want and believe what an analysis of structural racism, anti-Blackness, psychically, politically, whatever, gives them. If that's true, then do you feel like there are Black astrologers working right now who are kind of bumping up against this tension where, like, suddenly, and maybe you're one of them, I don't know, but, like, suddenly, because, okay, this is the kind of question I wanted to arrive at, like, because you are unwilling to disassociate from the world you live in and how this world deals with you, because you are unwilling to forget that, even when it comes to dealing with clients and doing readings for folks, do you feel like there's a kind of, like, not necessarily pushback, but, like, have you seen folks in like the Black astrology community run up against that tension and like have to make a decision as to like, am I sticking to this shit? And like, I'm just going to figure out what it means to do readings for folks while holding to my understanding of what's going on. Or like, niggas are not going to pay me for readings unless I pretend that civil rights is real. because, you know, like, because if that's true, right, astrology would not be remarkable in that sense, right? Like, whether it's the academy or any industry, really, like, to be employable and especially to, like, thrive and succeed, you know, like, even if you're an actor, right, like, you know, whether you're fucking, I don't know, Fred Moten or Viola Davis, like, there's still a certain performance of possibility or performance of solidarity or there's a certain kind of forgetting that you have to do to even be intelligible to people. And I'm wondering, like, if you felt that or seen that. And regardless of if you have or haven't, in your own practice, I'm curious, like, how you are just sort of preemptively building up that discipline to, like, hold both things at the same time with someone, even if they're not at that place, you know? So I'm thinking about, just to say, a Black person reaches out to you for a reading, you're in it, and then it becomes very clear that, like, again, hopefully this doesn't happen because, like, you're not finding clients in, like, the shade room comments or whatever, but, like,
I'm screaming.
But, you know, like, it could happen. And especially for folks out there who might not have started taking on clients or who are starting to do their own chart. Yeah, like, maybe some starting points or some things to think about in terms of building up that discipline to hold both things at once.
Absolutely. So this is a super, super interesting question, just because I feel like, one, there's so many sides to the question, but also, like, it has, I don't know, just thinking about many different things about astrology at once. So, okay, on this idea of, like, are there certain Black astrologers that are not benefiting because they are not doing that act of forgetting? It's interesting because my experience has been that with, like, Black folks online, which is primarily where I'm engaging Black folks besides my own little family because, you know, COVID, etc. In conversations about Blackness, I don't always find a, you know, like, reckoning with paradigmatic anti-Blackness, you know? So it's like, even just like, before we even get to then perhaps using astrology as a tool for furthering that analysis, I don't really see it just like in conversation, you know? And that's why, like, finding this podcast has been exciting. You know, being able to read just like certain things in Black studies, or even particularly like an Afro-pessimist thought with friends, and seeing other Black folks online who are doing that has been exciting, because, like, you know, folks are living through the experiences, but then, you know, tend to name anti-Blackness as like this interpersonal happening, you know, as opposed to itself a structure and a system. That's right. In my primary experience, you know. So it's like, I don't really at this point expect it of Black astrologers, because I don't really expect it of most of the Black people I just happen to have access to.
Right.
But what I do see is, like, definitely Black astrologers trying to build upon the foundational knowledge that they have. Definitely still in a sense where, like, it's oriented in, like, healing and relief work, but trying to show up more in the conversation and in the delineation. You know, like I remember as we were prepping, I was telling you about all this, study that's going into this idea of Black people being ruled by Saturn and what that would mean, that like Black people are ruled by this malefic planet, or that Black people show up in the sixth house, which is, you know, traditionally the house of like slavery and servitude, you know. So like, it's interesting because it's like, oh, y'all are saying it and then you're not saying it, but then you're saying it again. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
The relationship between Blackness and slaveness, like you're there and then like you take a sub turn away and then we dip our toes again. So it's like, yeah, I definitely am seeing that. But also what's interesting about astrology and its current existence, primarily as relief work, because that's not what everybody's doing, but is that that's not where it started, right? Thinking again about like the idea of the astrologer or the diviner being the one who could read the omens of the sky, right? Like not all of them were good omens, you know? Sometimes astrologers existed as doomsday preppers, you know, where they were coming here to tell you, listen, Saturn is about to, I don't know, square the sun. And so, Mr. King, you are about to, like, I don't know, die or see the fall, whatever. You know, this malefic planet is coming to fuck your shit up. Prepare for that outcome, you know? And so in that sense, there's, like, no relief being provided. And even, like, beyond, like, somewhere between like ancient astrology and like modern astrology. I know that there's also a strong relationship between astrologers and the concept of stoicism, right? Like astrology being used as a tool so that when, you know, good things in life happened, you didn't over celebrate, and when bad things happened, you didn't over lament, right? Being able to take everything kind of like in its stride, because that's just the way it is, right? As the birth chart tells it, like that's just the way it is. So that form of like very predictive, fate oriented, like truly like Hellenistic astrology definitely fell out of fashion when we moved from the ancient world into modernity, which is interesting because, you know, modernity is also what presents us with these new paradigms, which look for us to like have more of a hope practice, a healing practice, a relief practice, you know, in our navigation of the world and of community. And so I think that's also super interesting that like it is more so than the task of the modern astrologer, the one who is born of this modern world and its paradigms, that is seeking to provide forms of relief with these tools, whereas that was never their origin point, you know? And there are definitely people who, Black astrologers, who are beginning to go back to that ancient practice, which I think is the closest thing to what you describe in, like, you know, not providing forms of relief, but just being like, this is what it is. So sorry to say. But yeah, I'm definitely seeing that becoming more popular. Need to think through perhaps why that could be. And I myself am also somebody who's very interested in that work, of not necessarily providing relief all the time, but still I'm left wanting in terms of how Black astrologers are analyzing this predicament to which there is no relief.
No, that's great, right? Because it makes, yeah, it's like what, just like that's like we could ask, like, what kinds of knowings, plural, mm-hmm. might have been lost during mm-hmm. the, I mean, well, yeah, like, you know, colonization kills everything. And so whether it's like a cultural practice, spiritual practice, like a form of divining, like, so to think about the kinds of knowledges that were lost, and then to think about modernity, like you said, as this project of simultaneous reproduction and extraction of suffering, you know, our present nest, you know, this world needs suffering. And yet, also like, there's every industry, every kind of, I don't know, like, well, you know, maybe you could say every way of being modern has, every way of being, for every way of being modern, there's a tendency to perform relief or provide relief, right? Like, so for, aside from how sincere that relief is, right? The expectation of it being available and you being able to get it is real, right? Like, whether it's you have brain cancer or you want to know the sex of your child or you want to know if you will be married in the next 5 years, right? Like, whether you're a doctor, whether you are an astrologer, you are expected to provide the answer. And you'll be paid mightily for your services. Just thinking, I mean, that's really cool to think about Black astrologers trying to figure out, what does it mean to not perform this service that is really hot and desired? And not just because it reproduces a kind of epistemological violence that I don't want to reproduce, but also because there's maybe a kind of clarity and a kind of knowing that actually comes from refusing to do that, right? So, like, if you refuse to, you know, like you were saying, like, if you refuse to only provide relief, what else do you make room for? You know, and, you know, you mentioned Afro-pessimism. And, you know, whenever someone talks about, and Wilderson himself has said this, and other people say it often, and I think it is really true, like, you know, like, Afro-pessimism is so optimistic in the sense that it doesn't prove that coming to terms or believing in anti-blackness being a kind of paradigmatic violence that structures all of our lives, it doesn't really promise that on the other side of that there's a relief. But I do think that, like, at least personally speaking, right, like, that clarity has provided me a lot of space mentally to do other shit. Like, you know, like, being able to, and it's terrifying. It doesn't necessarily feel good all the time. It rarely feels good. Right. Like, it rarely feels, I would rarely use the word good to describe it, but that not being a bad thing, I think is really interesting, right? Like, being open to feeling things that aren't just good, being open to accept those things and not accept them in the sense that, accepting them in the sense that, like, you refuse to exhaust anymore, or you refuse to be more mindful, or no, okay, in the sense that if I say anti-blackness is a paradigm that structures our world from the economy to the psychic, and you know, a non-Black person bumps me while I'm walking, I don't know about y'all, but I feel like I am much better positioned to just go about my fucking day, like, than I was, you know, 5 years ago when I was getting people to register to vote, you know? You know what I mean? And, you know, I'm sure that's not universal, but, like, I do feel like that kind of clarity does make room for other stuff. Mm-hmm. And that feeling, even a feeling, and you know, people are always like, Afro-pessimism isn't affectively pessimistic. I mean, okay, sure, but I do think that you do end up feeling fucking sad. And there's no problem with that. Like, okay, duh, why the fuck wouldn't you be? But even that sadness makes way for shit. You know, mm-hmm. like, I do feel more, I don't know. Yeah. So that's really dope to think about. You know, when we think about Black refusal Absolutely. Happening all over the place. Yeah. Like astrology is mm-hmm. not, yeah, it's nice to think of astrology, not as a place where that isn't happening, but yeah, as a place that war is being fought.
That's super interesting, because like even as you were talking about like all that is like given room through I guess like borrowing into the knowledge of this ever looming inescapable like paradigm of anti-Blackness, I was thinking though, because like even in my sessions where we've been like, damn, like right here, we are grappling with anti-Blackness. Or even, like, you know, we are grappling with, like, these darker aspects or experiences within your life. Even just, like, being able to, like, shine a light on those shadows itself does provide some relief, even if I don't, like, get rid of what's in the shadows, mm-hmm. right? What's there. Mm-hmm. And similarly with like acknowledging that it's anti-Blackness. It's like, oh wow, so it's not me. It's this paradigm. And so I'm wondering, like, because this is like now a different form of relief, right? It's or I don't even know if like relief is the right word, or if English is just so limiting that I have to reach for the same word to describe like the catharsis of resting in that knowledge yeah. with no solution, you know?
Yeah.
But that's even what I was thinking about as you were talking about like being able to go about your day over things that 5 years ago would have made you, you know, like red in the face.
Mm-hmm.
Because it seemed like, you know, you were still in the process of pursuing this freedom from the thing that we've now accepted is not within, or not even, I was about to say not within reach, but like not even like existing, really. So, right. Yeah.
I think. Yeah, right. It's like, it's... I mean, yeah, it's like, it's not even such that I, you know, like, do I think an anti-Black world is possible? No, not necessarily because my understanding of all those words, anti-Blackness, world, and possibility, are all very contra to what modernity needs us to think those words mean to function, right? So it needs us to think that anti-Blackness is something that can be resolved through training and whatever. It needs us to think that the world is some steady state thing that has that has always been here, will always be here, and exists for our extraction. And possibility is just whatever the fuck we want to do. Which is truly not the case. Like, the space ratio that's happening is so funny, because it's like, y'all think that just because you have extracted the fuck out of the world, that the universe is just going to open its fucking pants for you. Like,
right.
You think just because you're the richest person alive, you can breathe outside of the atmosphere. And the gag is, they might be right eventually, right? Like, And so that's my ambivalence, right? Is that like, shit, they might be right. But being able to like, yeah, so that's all to say. You had said something that I'm going to respond to. Possibility.
Was it about the limitation of language and describing capacity?
Yes. I don't know why I thought of this, but I thought of, like, when children are young and they are afraid mm-hmm. of something, like being under their bed or being in the corner or being in the closet, I don't, you know, and whoever's taking care of the child reassures them, there's nothing under the bed, there's nothing in the corner. That's not enough. The child needs to see you in the corner. Right. They need to see you go under the bed. They need to see you open the closet. And they might need this again tomorrow. And that's just the truth. And I think that's because, like, okay, when I would ask my mom to, look at my closet to make sure nothing was there.
Right.
I wouldn't say that it relieved me only because the closet is still a scary place. Like, she didn't make it not scary.
Right.
She just kind of pushed it back a bit for me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I was a very anxious child. I was always asking my mom to promise me things. Like, I would go on a field trip to the zoo and I'd be like, can you promise me that I'm not going to be eaten? And she'd be like, okay, I promise. And I would force her. I would force her to say, I promise. Like, that kind of verbal reaffirmation was so important to me. But of course, like, it would happen again. I would get scared again and I would need that again. And so, yeah, I'm with you that maybe it's not relief as we are taught to think about relief, but the feeling that I would get when my mom would promise me, the feeling that children get when their person looks under the bed or looks in the closet, I feel like that's very akin to finding language for paradigmatic anti-blackness, right? It doesn't make tomorrow any easier to face.
Right.
But it does... Right. It does something else, though. And I think maybe the reason why, for me, it's hard to describe that something else is because it's not always clear to me what it has done or what it is doing. Not just because I don't have the language for it, but also because, like, I think I'm still learning to register it when I feel it. You know, like, register that thing. And I definitely feel it when I'm talking with you, when I'm talking with my friends, right? Like, whatever that thing is that isn't relief, I feel. But I also know that, like, tomorrow it could as easily terrorize me. And I mean, just like, you know, as a child, you could think, my mom lied to me. There is something in that. You know what I mean? Like...
Right.
You know, it's really a fucking pretty.
Or maybe it snuck in when I was sleeping.
Right. You know? Like, what does she know? She's not a monster. What the fuck? Like, she don't know what these niggas be up to.
Right.
And so, yeah. But no, I really love that idea that, yeah, it's providing something that we might not necessarily have the words for right now, but we are registering. And I think that one of the reasons why I wanted to get into astrology more is because developing that practice of registering things that I don't yet have words for, I think has been really beneficial to me, but it is very hard, especially like when I'm not in community with folks. So.
Right. No, definitely. And I feel like I'm even just kind of like still sitting with the analogy of like, the child asking their parents to check for mumps is under the bed or in the closet. I'm thinking about, when I'm in a session with a client and they're like, there's some planet fucking my shit up. Like, there's something in that closet that's messing with me.
Mm-hmm.
There's something in the birth chart that's messing with me. And it's like, nope, still anti-blackness. As it was yesterday, as it will be tomorrow. Like, having to be reminded. And I definitely feel the same that as we're talking about this, I also feel that sense of calm because I feel like there is a way in which the world, like, you know, gaslights Black folks into naming it as other things. You know, I'm experiencing violence and the world is telling me it's, you know, one thing or the other. And then we get to have this conversation and I get to, like, really hold on to, like, the affirmation of, like, oh, no, it's just anti-blackness once again, you know. And the calm that comes from like that sense of familiarity. Like, oh, I know you. You know, the devil I know.
Yeah, the devil I know, right.
That kind of thing. Definitely, definitely. But I think it's also very interesting to think about, you know, earlier we were talking about like, I'm delineating on Earth and not delineating on Mars, right? And that makes me think about conversations we had about Afrofuturism, you know, or even not like to refer to something so particular, just these general ideas of like escape, right? And potential escape to other planetary bodies, which these billionaires are now, you know, in the pursuit of, right? And I definitely, like I'm sure you have as well, have found myself in many conversations where I'm with Black folks potentially talking about escape from the paradigm that exists on this world just by virtue of being on others. And to me, what a problematic premise that is. Because, of course, we carry these paradigms with us into however we choose to organize ourselves on whatever planet, you know. And even thinking about, like, well, what I was saying earlier about, like, the planets potentially being accomplices in anti-blackness when they reveal one of anti-blackness's like expressions or one of its heads to me in the middle of a session. In a similar way, when I think about these ideas of like all of us jetting off to another planet, I then again am forced to think about how that other planet would make itself an accomplice in anti-blackness and allowing for the paradigms of this world to be preserved and furthered there. So I guess that's also in my mind in this conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. I love the word accomplice. I like accomplice instead of ally. Like, I think that's a nice substitution. I still feel like it. I mean, because I don't really believe in allies, I still think that accomplice, you know, unless people are, you know, blowing shit up. I'm not blowing shit up, so let me shut the fuck up.
But, I'm good.
But you know, I guess I'm nobody's accomplice using my own definition. But you know, like, I like accomplice in this context too, because I don't think it really condemns the planets, right? As much as it offers up the possibility that they might not be benevolent. Hey there. You're listening to Abolitionish, a Black politics and culture podcast at the end of the world, hosted by John John and produced by Y Lee. This is season 2, episode 3, Space is the Place, part 1, astrology, UFOs, and faded blackness. You can listen to every episode we've ever recorded by visiting anchor.fm or Spotify. And you can become a monthly supporter of the podcast with a donation of $5, $10, $50, $100, or $1 million by visiting patreon.com/abolitionish. That's patreon.com/abolitionish. You can follow us on Twitter at abolitionish and on Instagram at abolitionishpod. You can always send us an email, a recommendation for guests, topics, and the like at abolitionishpod@gmail.com. We look forward to hearing from you about your ideas, your responses, how you're faring out in that great big fucked up world. And we're so excited to share another episode with you very soon. Until then, we'll see you on the other side of something better.